You're listening to the Infused Leadership Podcast.
I'm talking.
Because leadership is really important.
I'm talking.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Infuse Leadership Podcast. My name is Jeff Manis. I'm the lead pastor here at Element Church in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and I am super excited for this two-part podcast called Tricking People to Follow Jesus. And one of the reasons why I'm so excited for this is actually a question that came in from one of our listeners. They work in the secular workplace, and they asked us to do a podcast on how do you lead people to Jesus in an environment where it's not really allowed to do that. I know in the secular environment, there's varying circumstances that people have, but for most people, it's not really acceptable just to be out there evangelizing, proselytizing in the workplace, that there's usually some restrictions with that. And so we have brought in a couple of special guests for us in this podcast. We have with us Derek Mowry. Hello, Derek.
Hello.
Derek is the executive pastor at Element Church currently, but he worked for a number of years in management in the Kroger grocery store industry. And I already forgot, Derek, how many years you said you served in management, but
it's about 10.
10 years. Derek served in management. Many of those years, he was following Jesus as well. And so then we also have with us Todd Halverson. He is currently the store manager of Michael's Craft Store here in Cheyenne. He is also on our leadership council here at Element Church as a volunteer leader here. And Todd has served in management in Michael's for 18 years, 10 years at the current store that he's at. So hello, Todd.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Do you have glitter on your face?
Not that you can see.
Okay. And then we also have our normal host with us who's going to serve as a guest today, Pastor Jared Bayless. He's our creative arts pastor. Hi, Jared.
Howdy ho!
That was awesome. Jared, before being in ministry, worked in the secular workplace as well and has some great insight to this whole topic. So I'm the lone person who has only ever lived their life inside the church. I'm very sheltered. I don't know much about the secular workplace, so I'm serving as the host today. So again, we are going to talk about, we use the title, Tricking People to Follow Jesus, because that's kind of how it feels, I think, sometimes when you're in an environment where you can't really be overt about your faith, but you still want to lead people to Jesus. And so obviously we're not trying to deceive people, but we are kind of being a little undercover in trying to lead them to Jesus. So we're going to go ahead and jump right into the discussion here. And hopefully this is helpful to you. If you work in a secular environment, but you still want to lead folks to Jesus, I'm hoping this will give you some practical tools to do that. So I'm just going to throw out the first question here, and you guys can duke it out as to who's going to answer it first. But in your experience in the secular workplace, I know there are lots of things that were important, but what was the one thing you feel was the most important, or is the most important for Todd, who's still working in the secular environment, the most important thing in leading people to Jesus without really them knowing what you're doing? So what's the one thing? I'm going to let Todd, he's leaning towards his mic, so don't let Todd answer.
Yeah, I figured since I'm still in the secular world, I'll take that one first. You know, I might be the only church that someone ever sees. They're not consciously looking for church. They're not actively seeking it out. So I can be that representation in that opportunity. So I ask myself, what are they seeing? Are they seeing the Jesus that I want them to see?
That's good. Good. Derek?
Derek.
I believe being trustworthy is a quality that you have to demonstrate to people as kind of the entryway into having any kind of a faith discussion with somebody. So being trustworthy, letting your word be your word. You know, there's a lot of things that go into that being trustworthy. But in that marketplace, I think owning your own mistakes, don't pass the buck. You know, like when you mess something up, you take the credit or the brunt of that. And then just operating with integrity and business practices and those kinds of things. Let people see that you can be trusted in, you know, pricing, purchases, inventory, labor practices, all of the different things that go into running a business. But you've got to be trustworthy or you're not a credible source.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh, me. I would say for me, it was being consistent. Kind of, it's a little bit of the same thing what these guys are saying, but I would say I noticed right away that people were trying to basically shoot holes in my story and shoot holes in my character because they didn't believe I was who I said I was or who I portrayed that I was. And I watched them take shots at me over and over again. And they weren't intentional. Some were intentional. I can get into that later. But they were assuming that I was just like them and that I was going to slip and fall and that I was putting on a face every day at work. And I was just workplace Jared. And then I had a separate type of thing. That was the water cooler talk that happened around my cubicle all the time. And I did not partake in, which made it super awkward. Yeah. But that made them very uncomfortable. And so, but what happened was I saw over time was that people started to realize that I was who I said I was. And then questions started to happen because of that. So you kind of have to endure, I'd say, through the first part because people are waiting to see and waiting to wait you out, I suppose, is a better way. Waiting you out to see your true character come out.
So this was not a question we had pre-planned, but I wanted to ask Derek and Todd this question. So we'll start with Todd. You 18 years in management, but for how many of those years now have you really been seriously following Jesus, like passionately following him?
Oh, I would say definitely the last 5 years.
Okay. So for the first 13 years of your management life, that this wasn't even like on your radar as a priority?
No.
Okay.
Church was at church and work was at work.
Okay. And Derek, I know that you believed, but again, you weren't really taking your faith seriously your whole management season. So about how long in management would you say you were like intentionally, passionately following Jesus?
Probably only about 2 years of that.
Okay. And that led into your season here then of being hired here at Element.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
Okay, cool. So could you share a specific story that shifted your perspective in how you led in the workplace? So what took you from viewing it just as a mundane job to actually being you personally on the mission field, you know, leading people to Jesus? So was there a shifting point in your leadership where that you can remember, man, this was that turning point that, okay, now I'm intentional in the workplace of I'm trying to get people to see Jesus, Todd, that you put it that way. I want to be the Jesus that I might be the only time that they see church or see Jesus through me. So when was that time that shifted in your leadership?
Well, one of the leaders at where I work has let me know that her daughter is an atheist. And so she started asking me by my actions, because of the way I held myself at the store, she started asking me questions of faith. And so that's when I realized that my leadership has an influence on someone that doesn't even work for me.
That's good.
Romans 12, we are many parts of one body. And at that moment, in that time in my career, I had just memorized Romans 12, committed the whole chapter to memory. So that really resonated with me that, you know, this daughter of this employee literally is connected to my leadership and my influence through running the way I run the store. So I'm not just preaching. Am I showing them Jesus by just the actions? And then when the question comes, then we can start providing information that's legitimate and that they can believe in.
That's good. That's awesome. Derek?
For me, it was kind of the same thing, just influencing somebody there that I was working with. I can remember a 19, 20-year-old kid that was working in the same store. And over the course of time, I just started to kind of talk with him about things. You know, I noticed he was going through a lot of the things that a 20-year-old kid does, relationships and finances and struggles with work and prioritizing and partying and all of the different things that a young kid is doing. And he was suffering the repercussions of a lot of those choices. And so it gave me the opportunity to kind of just lend some wisdom as somebody who had experienced what he was going through, made similar choices. But then felt like God had something different for me, that I was going to live a little bit different way. And so I think that just, he began to trust me. Mm-hmm. And I think he was seeking but didn't know it. And so that was back when we were doing our first remodel, lots of volunteer labor and stuff. I was a volunteer at that time as well. But invited him to come along just kind of as a random, you know, hey, this is what I'm doing tonight kind of thing. And he showed up full force, wanted to help before he'd even attended church. I think he was just wanting to kick the tires kind of thing before he actually committed to coming to a service. And I can remember just working side by side with him, him just working his tail off, you know, doing some demo, building some stuff. You know, none of us knew what we were doing. So we're, you know, kind of trying to build this church, you know, and him coming along. And then he just decided, I don't remember how it exactly unfolded, but he ended up coming to church. And I want to say either the first Sunday or second Sunday, maybe, he wasn't here very long. And I can remember you doing an altar call where you physically did like old school altar call. Call, like, come up and pray with this person if this message has resonated with you. And I can remember sitting next to him that whole time, and he's, you know, he's fidgeting. God is just wrenching on his heart. He's just weeping sitting next to me. And I can remember, I mean, he just looked over, just made eye contact, and he, you know, he's communicating, this is for me. And so I walked with him up, and you prayed, led him to Christ.
And I know what you're talking about now. That's awesome.
And so he really dug in and was growing. I felt like I had an opportunity to disciple him. And then also there was another guy that I was working with in a secular workplace that was pouring into him as well. And both of us were really trying to help him grow. He was making some great choices as far as just what he was going to do with his newfound faith. He was really on fire. You know, I can just remember the first couple of days of him getting saved, him just asking, hey, what do I do next? You know, and I can remember him reading through the Gospel of John, like within just a couple of hours of that first Sunday, and then asking, what do I read next? Yeah. And just devouring the word and really growing, just really getting a feel for his faith. And, you know, I still believe that God's going to use him, even though we've separated because of the, you know, the workplace environment, and he has gone on to, he's leading other people and things. And I don't know whether he's fully involved in following Christ at this moment, but I believe that seed was planted. Yeah. And he'll come back to it. I think it's one of those things where there's times in his life where he leans on his faith again, and that won't return void. He'll be back. But as far as my ability to influence him, I felt like that was the turning point where I went from casual follower myself to thinking, you know what, I really can do something here in this grocery store.
That's awesome.
To lead people like this worked completely. And I knew it wouldn't, you know, every single person I invited to church wouldn't sit next to me and just the Spirit completely convict them. They get saved. They go on to grow. I knew that wouldn't happen with every single person, but the potential was there. Like it inspired me to really be intentional. You know, like Jared was saying, to really make sure my personal life matched up with my work life, and you know, that it that I really, really was intentional about how I was living and things as I led those people. So I can remember that story was most impactful for me to really feel mission oriented at work.
That's awesome. Cool. So Jared, do you have a story where you felt like when you were working in the secular place that something shifted or anything?
I would say I'm going to take a little bit different route. It's not going to be necessarily a story that me with somebody else, because I'm sure I have a bunch of stories, but I feel like to answer this question, I remember very, very vividly. So I hated my job. I was actually doing temp work, and I was working three jobs. I was living in an apartment that I couldn't pay for anything. And I was eating peanut butter and jelly. I was having to break ice off of my bathtub every night because I wouldn't turn the heat on, because I couldn't afford it. So I didn't break the pipes because it was an apartment building. So the pipes were okay. I was getting sick because of all this. I just wasn't eating healthy. I didn't have any furniture. I didn't tell my family. So needless to say, I hated this job. And then, but it was, I finally got a little bit of a promotion, got a little bit more money. But the thing that happened was I started to get pretty depressed, I suppose. And I just hated my job to the point where I would almost break down in tears just having to think about getting up in the morning. And I remember just being all alone and didn't have anybody to talk to. I was a little proud. I didn't want to tell people that I was needing help. But here's one that shifted for me was when I decided, okay, so I have been praying about this, and I have been praying for an out, and God has not answered that. So I remember thinking, all right, if God is not answering this, this means he wants me to stay in this for some reason. And if I'm going to stay in this for some reason, I need to change my perspective of what this is. So I had this one epiphany one night, and I remember getting up in the morning and instead decided to say, instead of, God, just get me through this day, I shifted every single morning to what I call a 10-second prayer of, okay, God, who do you want me to reach today? Yeah. And so I decided that I was going to do the work, do it really well, do it with excellence, because that's what we're called to do as believers, is to work hard and to lead by example in that. And so I didn't discredit or discount the work. I was very thankful for it. It provided for me. But when I went into work every single day with, okay, God, who is it today that you want me to reach? The stories began pouring in, and people randomly, it wasn't random, but it seemed random, would come to me for all kinds of different things. And when my head was on a swivel looking for opportunities, it changed. And then I would even get to, because it was a temp place, so people were coming and going, getting different jobs. But what I found was, is I would go, well, God's about ready to move me on, because, I mean, I don't get along with any of these people. We just don't, I've never even talked to them. And sure enough, a new story would come out of it, out of the most, I guess, the person that you wouldn't imagine I would even get along with or even have a conversation with, we would somehow spill into God in some way. And then I became excited to go to work, because it was like an adventure rather than just dreading it. I took the focus off of myself, and that's when it shifted, and asking God, what do you want me to do in this moment, in this job, in this situation?
That's awesome. I think that's where a lot of people are at. I mean, they're stuck working a job, and it's not a dream job. But when if you can shift that perspective to, okay, well, God's not got me out of this yet, so he must have me here for a reason. I think that can bring some life into the workplace environment. Even if it's not where you want to be forever, it is where you are now, and you have a chance to share your faith. And I think that would, with the stories that Derek and Todd shared too, that when you start living with that perspective, you'll start seeing those people like that. So, you know, Todd may not have been open to that conversation with that woman who has an atheist daughter. Were he not looking for that? Same with Derek and his friend who came to church and got saved. And again, you know, not every one of your coworkers may get saved. That's not necessarily the point. It's kind of, we're in right now, this won't air during the same series, but right now we're in the series, the Won't You Be My Neighbor series. And the ultimate goal is for us just to show Jesus, whether they ever get saved or not, is to show them Jesus. Obviously, we do want them to get saved and come to Jesus, but when you live with that perspective, that can really help in seeing every one of those people. They're not there by chance. They're there by divine appointment, that you've been placed there by them. So that's good. So how do you work Jesus into a conversation when that's typically not acceptable in the secular workplace? Like, how do you, you know, how do you get Jesus into the normal flow of conversation without being weird and without kind of crossing that line? So I don't know who wants to share on that.
I can. This kind of plays off of, you know, the first question, my answer of trust. I think the biblical principles that you demonstrate will open the door to those conversations. So I feel like demonstrating integrity and service, compassion, grace, and just quality leadership, I think, oftentimes opens the door for Jesus to enter the conversation. Like, I feel like any time where you're operating in that, I don't know whether it's integrity or pursuing holiness or whatever it is, but you're demonstrating to people that you're a credible source for truth. And so, when you demonstrate those things, I think oftentimes that's the person that that everybody goes to tell them your problems and to ask for advice, and just to be that this person won't judge me kind of contact in that workplace. And I feel like on a number of occasions that is the primer, I guess, that gets that conversation to a place where you can say, you know, the reason I do this, or the reason I would recommend that, is because of my faith in Jesus, or, you know, tying that into some kind of scriptural reference or something like that. So, good.
Todd?
Well, I think in this environment, straightforward discipleship will not work until the environment is believable. So I can't just stand on my leadership platform because of the company's stances on religion and what have you. So I can't just, you know, preach a sermon, if you will, from my meetings. So I have to make sure
that'd
that
be
the
awesome though.
yes, it would. So I have to have an environment that's believable. Okay, so I think as Romans 12 would tell us, take the responsibility of leadership seriously. That's kind of where that for me leads to, is that you're building an environment that people are kind of being nurtured in. Some are believers, some are not, and you're kind of in this mixed up world where some understand what you're doing and some don't understand what you're doing. And so until they see that the results are there and what kind of environment that's actually safe for someone to be in, then they can start to respond to other things. And the questions will arise. Well, why are you different? I get that question quite a bit, actually. You know, I've been in lots of stores. I've worked for restaurants, and this place is way different than anything else I've ever been to. So, why do you do it differently? And there you go. The door's open. I didn't do anything specific, but I did.
Yeah.
So people believe what they see first. So the environment you lead should look like what you want to say.
That's good.
Yeah. So it's kind of like I was equating it to a chef or a cook. You know, no one's going to care about the ingredients until they've tried your dish. Hmm. And so, like, the Bible for me is the best ingredients, the finest ingredients. And so when I infuse that, if I may say that word, right?
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
If great. I infuse that into my leadership style, and then they start asking the questions, well, why are you different?
You can tell them
well, here's from. The ingredients that I use.
That's awesome. I love that.
Good.
And it reminds me of so here I'm gonna bring the Bible in because I'm the pastor, so I'm gonna be spiritual for a second. 1 Peter 3:15 says, "Instead, you must worship Christ as Lord of your life. And if someone asks you about your hope as a believer, always be ready to explain it." I think that's what you guys are saying. Like you're gonna lead in such a way that they're gonna want to know, where does that kind of leadership come
yes.
from? And so then you can go back to the ingredients. Well, this is why I'm acting this way. This is why I created this kind of environment, because this is where it comes from. So, Jared, any experience in that?
Lots. I didn't share a specific story, so I'll kind of bring it back a little bit from the last question into this question. But I had, I have two people in mind. There was a story where I was at work in this open office environment that we're all at tables. So this was not cubicles, this was all tables with personal computers. So everybody can hear everything. And so I had a girl who was sitting next to me and said, my wife, she was my girlfriend at the time, was moving to the city that I was in. And this girl next to me knew that this was happening and said, "So you guys going to live together?" And I said, "No." And she asked me why. I said, let me see if I can explain this to you. I said, "I'm a Christian." And I said, and it's not that I don't want to live with her, because I really do, if I'm going to be really honest.
Yeah.
And I said,
the desire's there, right?
Yeah. And I said, but if we do, we're probably going to sleep together. And I said, if I'm going to be really honest with you, and I want to do that, I said, but not on the selfish side of me, but we're Christians and we want to honor God in that. Yeah. So that's why we're not going to live together. And I thought, and she looked at me and her exact words were, "You are so weird." But she came back when she was leaving. And I remember she asked me for, when I had, this is going to sound weird, I had my first album out, but I did. And she knew this. And that was another. That
you
was
want
another,
to share a link to that album or anything?
I don't actually. Okay. I don't want you to hear that one. But anyway, she asked for that before she left. Those were her parting words as she was walking out the door. That's for the cool. last time was, "Can I have some of your music?" And then a couple of years later, she asked for more because she said, "There's something about it that makes me feel good when I listen to that music." Mm-hmm. So that was one. Another was another guy came after me, literally assumed that I was a certain way and that I was hiding things about even my, we'll say, sexual orientation. And they were spreading rumors about me around the office through email, because they told me this later. And they were out to get me. But here's the thing is he came after me every day and would make fun of me, mock me. And this guy's in his 50s. So we're not talking about a young guy. We're talking about. And but one day he overheard me on the phone, because everybody can hear everything, of down the road. I had my car in the shop and he said, "Hey, I can take you over there if you want." And I was like puzzled why he was being nice to me. So I agreed, let him take me over there. He's like, "We can go to lunch." So I was really weirded out by this, but we went to lunch and he said, "So tell me about this Christian music. What is this all about?" And there it was. And I was thinking, You have to endure. And I would agree with everything Todd said about people are watching and waiting and trying to shoot holes in it. And they are so anxious to know why you aren't like them, but they desire so deeply to be like you. If you can give them the ingredients, like, or if you can, I guess the final dish is, as Todd was saying, would be perfect, is perfect. And they will start to ask those questions. And that's when Jesus has entered into the conversation. You know, I had a girl walk in the first thing in the day, said, "Can I talk to you in the break room?" And is broken down crying because she did not receive the blessing at her Catholic church and was told to go sit down as she's crying and said, "You're a Christian. Tell me, what do I do?" And I was thinking, it's 7 in the morning. How in the world do I handle this? You know, like, I mean, those are the things that and I was like, and all I did was create the environment, and that, and God honestly will do the rest, and it will feel natural, and you'll be thrust into it, but it will be a totally God ordained thing.
So you agree with everything Todd said, but you didn't say that about Derek. So,
well,
we're cutting him out of the podcast.
I bought more albums. Edit.
I mean, it's a grocery store. It's a grocery store. Yeah, you do. You don't have an album.
I think everything. I agree with what Derek said too.
I think he was in the
there
room.
There you go.
I forgot.
Yeah, there he is.
He's hiding behind the microphone.
Yeah, you too, man. So, keep it up, man.
Something every one of you guys said, which again I think is so key for people to hear, is that you don't have to force Jesus into the conversation. That if you're living your life like you should as a Christian, doesn't mean you're living perfectly, right? But you're living your life as you should, Jesus will come up because people are going to want to know what's different. Like, why do you lead that way? Or why do you not do that thing? Or why do you not talk a certain way? Jesus comes into the conversation. You don't have to force him in. And I think that's when they're most open to it as well. Like, if you force it in, like, "Hey, can I tell you about this guy named Jesus?" Then they're all weirded out.
I would be weirded out.
Yeah, exactly. and you're a Christian.
Yeah. But if
you'll just live, like, Jesus is already in the conversation, whether his name is there or not, because you're there. And if he lives in you, then he's in the conversation. So,
well, one of the things I had to remember or learn the hard way was we have to allow margin or space for the Holy Spirit to really move and work. You know, I could quote a Bible scripture all I want, but the Holy Spirit has to be able to have the room to play around and root and kind of tear down all their previous misconceptions of what church is and what their knowledge. I don't know, they were burned or, you know, they got a raw deal somewhere. You know, I don't know what happened, but the Holy Spirit does, and it can definitely, you know, fix that.
That's good. Derek, do you have anything to say?
Nope.
I would love to hear it.
No. Nope, I'm done. Nope.
So that concludes part one of our conversation about tricking people to follow Jesus here on the Infused Leadership Podcast. Join us again in 2 weeks. So we usually do them one time a month. This month we're releasing two. So in 2 weeks, we'll release part two of tricking people to follow Jesus. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you could please rate and review us on our iTunes podcast, that would be fantastic. As always, if you have questions that you would like us to answer on the podcast, you can email us infuse@elementchurchwy.com. Again, we hope that this podcast was great for you and that it infused your leadership with love.